Committee, and I would like to open up a hearing on Senate Bills 637 and 668 jointly. And first up, our very own Senator Suzanne Bonamici. You have her testimony in front of you. It never fails to amaze me how thorough she is. First, Mrs. Richardson.
Oh, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 637, as you can see from the staff measure summary and the dashboard amendments we have before us, is a very detailed bill that provides a framework for schools to adopt integrated pest management plans, and I'm afraid if I went further it would be redundant about on what we're about to hear. So I could do 668 real quickly, which I would again defer to proponents, but requires that green cleaning policies be established in public schools, community colleges, and institutions of higher education.
Okay, Senator Bonamici.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Suzanne Bonamici. I represent the people of Senate District 17, which is in Northeast Washington County in Northwest Portland. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present testimony on Senate Bill 637 today, which requires integrated pest management for Oregon schools by 2012. This bill is a result of a work group that I was asked to chair by then-Senator Brad Avakian following the 2007 session, and I've attached to your testimony a list of members of the work group. We started in October 2007 and had our last work group meeting in 2009 of this year, although we have continued to communicate by email with questions and concerns. The number of work group members is quite large, and the participants were very diverse, and all of their input was welcomed. And I know, Mr. Chair, that you and I are both ducks, but I really want to especially acknowledge the participation and input from the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University on this particular bill, because they have provided very valuable technical expertise throughout the process and have attended, several members have attended virtually every work group meeting. So we also broke into subcommittees at one point to address a couple of specific issues, but our overall goal was to minimize exposure of pesticides, especially to children, and to improve their health. Integrated pest management is not a new concept, but one that's becoming increasingly more prevalent, and I've certainly learned a lot about it throughout this process. And I put on the first page there a statement from the U.S. EPA recommending that schools use integrated pest management to reduce pesticide risk and exposure to children. Put simply, IPM is a safer and usually less costly option for effective pest management in a school community. A school IPM program uses common sense strategies to reduce sources of food, water, and shelter for pests in your school buildings and grounds. And that's from the EPA. Senate Bill 637 provides the structure for integrated pest management for Oregon schools. Section 1 makes the act part of Chapter 637, which is the chapter on pesticides. Section 2 contains definitions, which include the components of school integrated pest management, what constitutes an emergency, and clarifies which schools are covered by the act. Section 3 requires that the governing body of the school adopt an integrated pest management plan and makes clear that the plan does not need to address, for example, the use of products such as insecticidal soap or sanitizer. The role of the integrated pest management coordinator and the training requirements are in Section 4, and all of the experts on integrated pest management believe that that was important for some training to have an effective program. And I know we've had discussions with the Extension Service at Oregon State University and the numerous resources that are available currently to provide the requisite training. And I received an email just yesterday from our friends at OSU about the a grant that they just received to help with integrated pest management in schools, and I hope they'll provide some more information about that. Section 5 clarifies that a low-impact pesticide can be used if the integrated pest management is followed and found to be ineffective, and if the application is done by a licensed applicator. Section 6 covers when a pesticide can be applied. An important component of integrated pest management is providing notice of pesticide application to parents and staff, and these notice requirements are in Section 7. Section 8 contains requirements for record keeping when a pesticide is applied, and that will facilitate the evaluation of the Integrated Pest Management Program. The Department of Agriculture's rulemaking authority is contained in Section 9, and that section also contains the health issues that need to be considered in the rulemaking process regarding which pesticides can be used in schools. We tried to simplify. We heard from the school community that they wanted really simple, clear guidance on what pesticides they could use if they went through the process and realize that they needed to use a pesticide. So first we go to the label, and then you go to the rule. And so we went through lots of different discussions about how to simplify that process, and that's where we ended. Section 10 amends the statute that contains the licensing requirements for applicators to include the people who will apply pesticides in schools if that needs to be done. And Section 11 governs the development of one or more model integrated pest management plans by 2011. I did put in the note there that there are several resources available now. There's some school district in the state that are already using integrated pest management. There's a lot of resources out there available. I did attach a page that lists some of those. I found the Integrated Pest Management Institute has an entire section on schools. They even do certification for schools, and there's a lot of information out there. The Dash 4 amendments, I want to explain a bit where they came from. After our last work group meeting, there were still some issues that were being discussed, and I asked for input from the work group members. There were some issues that were raised. I tried to incorporate most of those into the Dash 4 amendments. They're primarily technical amendments from the bill. There's one sort of substantive change in that the Pesticide Analytical Response Center has been given a consulting role in the rulemaking process. They had a sort of approval role before, and now they're moved up to a consulting role. I anticipate that you will ask questions about the cost of integrated pest management. And we don't have the fiscal yet on the Dash 4 amendments. The reading that I've done and what I've heard is that it can be cost-effective, especially for districts that are now purchasing pesticides and spraying them on a sort of regular basis as a preventive method, which is incompatible with the principles of integrated pest management. Some of the school districts have already implemented, as I said, integrated pest management. LFO is doing their analysis now based on early discussions. They looked at the rulemaking authority in this biennium as the fiscal impact. But as you're considering the fiscal impacts of this bill, I also urge you to consider the risk management aspects and, importantly, the long-term health care costs that may be avoided by implementation of the provisions in this bill. I've also, as I said, attached some more information about sources of resources about school integrated pest management, but I also put some quotes about what organizations are saying about IPM, and that's on the attached page, talking about the reduction in pesticide use and cost savings that districts have seen from implementing integrated pest management. National Association of School Nurses, National Parent Teacher Association, et cetera, have been very supportive of integrated pest management. Finally, there are certainly others here who will testify about sort of the scientific and technological aspects, which are way beyond my area of expertise. But I really want to urge you to keep in mind that children are much more susceptible to risks from pesticides because of the size of their bodies and the way that they interact with their environments. They're crawling around, putting things in their mouth. Exposure that has a potential to harm a developing child may happen during critical periods of human development. And the use of integrated pest management can help to reduce those exposures and also provide additional benefits by reducing pests and their associated allergens with a possible reduction in asthma triggers. So I want to thank you so much for hearing this bill. I urge you to adopt the Dash 4 amendments and send the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I will certainly answer any questions you may have, although if they're technical or scientific, I will probably defer to those who are here with much more expertise on those areas than I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator, and thanks for your very thorough presentation, and thanks to the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University. Any questions for Senator Bonamici? If not, can you rejoin us?
Absolutely. Oh, you're letting me off easy.
Gail Shibley from DHS.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I'm Gail Shibley, Administrator of the Office of Environmental Public Health in Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services. And I just wanted to express, as on behalf of the department, one, our appreciation and recognition for Senator Bonamici's leadership in this effort. We participated in the work group on pesticide use in and around schools, and we support this bill because we think that integrated pest management in schools can reduce pesticide exposures, pests, and allergens, each of which may be asthma triggers. And if I might, Mr. Chair, just say a couple words about it, the very important issue that Senator Bonamici mentioned. Pesticides, by their very nature, are designed to disrupt biological processes. That's why we buy them, and that's exactly what they're supposed to do. That's really terrific, and they're very efficient mechanisms. The risk from a human health standpoint, of course, is that children are particularly sensitive and vulnerable to those products for a variety of reasons. First, pound for pound, they breathe more air and eat more food and drink more water. those are all possible vectors of pesticide exposure. Second, a child's developing system is not as effective at breaking down and excreting pesticides, so a child's body is just simply not as effective at eliminating the pesticides as we as adults have. Third, rapid cell division during childhood can multiply any aberrant effects much more quickly just by that process. Fourth, exposures to pesticides during critical periods in a child's development can cause permanent damage. An active ingredient, for example, in many pesticides, permethrin, interferes with cellular processes of insects and is suspected to be a disruptor of human endocrine hormones. It's the same hormonal system that normally turn on and off the natural growth of children. It's the lack of certainty about just what that effect is and what the quote-unquote safe level is. want to call to your attention the fact that the lack of toxicity data on about 38% of the chemical pesticides and those inert ingredients within that category alone. So, of course, the labeling is based on the data that is there. If you don't do the tests, you don't have the data, you simply don't have that kind of level of knowledge. In addition to the special vulnerabilities in terms of children's bodies, of course, their predictable behavior also puts them at greater risk. The so-called behavioral aspects of crawling around on floors and on the ground, handling equipment on the school playground, playing in the dirt and the lawn where pesticides are often commonly applied, just absolutely normal behaviors, together with what we know and what we don't yet know about the toxicity of these pesticides, additive, cumulative, synergistic effects, makes it sensible, again, from a precautionary standpoint, to limit the exposure potential where it's practicable. And we believe that integrated pest management in this way is a practicable approach that can maintain a healthy school environment and reduce a child's exposure to pesticides as well as the pests and allergen and allergy triggers. We don't, on behalf of our department, anticipate much more than a very minimal fiscal impact. It may include periodic increases in workload to consult on human health and toxicological concerns, and certainly in collaboration with our good colleagues at Oregon State University and our terrific colleagues at Oregon Department of Agriculture and development of any model IPM plans. We would anticipate supporting this any incremental increase in the workload by existing DHS staff. I do note that those staff, in large part, are now currently funded by the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center, which, of course, is up to your good wishes in terms of funding into the future. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of the bill and appreciate the leadership by Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. Any questions from Ms. Shibley? Thank you. Andrea Salinas from OEC. Would you care to testify on these bills? Okay. Oh, pardon?
Renee.
Well, I have her. We're just going down the list. Okay, Renee.
Welcome, Chair House, distinguished members of the committee. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Dr. Renee Hackemiller-Paradis, and I'm the Environmental Health Program Director at Oregon Environmental Council. Oregon Environmental Council supports both SB 637 and SB 668. Regarding SB 637, Integrated Pest Management in Schools, we thank Senator Bonamici for her leadership on this issue, and we valued our participation in the work group on pesticides use in and around school that she chaired. It's been estimated that over 80% of schools in the U.S. are applying pesticides on a regular basis, whether they have a pest problem or not. This is problematic not only because of the link between pesticides and health problems in children, such as asthma and neurological disorders, but also because it is unnecessarily wasteful and an ineffective way to keep pests out of school environments. Integrated Pest Management, or IPM, is an approach to pest control that utilizes regular monitoring to determine if and when treatments are needed and employs a combination of strategies and tactics to keep pest numbers low enough to prevent unacceptable damage or annoyance. IPM encourages non-chemical approaches to pest management, including installing door sweeps, using steel wool to plug holes, and reducing sources of food, water, and shelter for pests in school buildings and grounds. IPM, as defined in SB 668, allows for the use of low-impact pesticides when non-chemical pest control methods have proven ineffective, providing a reasonable option to safely eliminate all pests. 14 states and many school districts, including many in Oregon, have already adopted IPM programs that have proven to be effective at managing pests, reducing the use of pesticides, and generating cost savings. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, which encourages schools to adopt IPM practices, schools practicing IPM have reduced pesticide use by as much as 90%. This reduction in pesticide use translates into significant cost savings for cash-strapped schools. Put simply, school IPM is a well-tested pest management system that significantly reduces children's exposures to pesticides while effectively and economically managing pests in a school community. Now I'm going to talk about the other one, SB 668, which would require K through 12 schools, community colleges, and state institutions of higher education in Oregon to shift to using third-party certified green cleaning products that are safer for the human health and the environment. Cleaning products regulated by FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, such as disinfectants, sanitizers, would are specifically excluded from this requirement in SB 668. So what are green cleaning products? Green cleaning products are products designed to protect health without harming the environment. There are hundreds of manufacturers who offer certified green cleaning products that have met defined criteria for human health, safety, and environmental impact. These certified green cleaning products also work well and are cost competitive compared to traditional products. Why green cleaning products in schools? When school is in session, children and school employees spend 30 to 50% of their time in and around schools. According to the EPA, half this population may be exposed to polluted indoor air, chemical fumes, and other toxins. We know that ingredients and cleaners can contribute to a wide range of chronic diseases, ranging from respiratory problems to cancer. Many cleaning products used on a daily basis in schools contain hazardous chemicals linked to asthma, reduced fertility, cancers, and harm to the heart, lungs, kidneys, and immune systems. The states of Maine, Illinois, and New York have passed legislation requiring schools to use green cleaning products, and at least 10 other states are currently considering green cleaning legislation this year. A well-designed green cleaning program can help reduce those harmful exposures and yield many other positive benefits for students, custodial staff, administrators, and the environment, including helping students stay healthy by reducing environmental hazards that exacerbate asthma, which is the leading cause of school absenteeism. Research shows a clear link between poor indoor air quality, sick students and teachers, and poor academic and occupational performance. Green cleaning policies can also protect the health of custodial staff, especially women of childbearing age who are particularly susceptible to health problems caused by their frequent and close interaction with cleaning chemicals. Choosing safer products and training staff in proper usage can help reduce the number of injuries, decrease workers' compensation claims, and lower insurance costs. And finally, using green and clean products can preserve the environment by reducing the number of harmful ingredients that find their way into our drinking water, lakes, and streams, threatening public health and adding to pollution. Green cleaning in schools can be cost-effective. Hundreds of case studies have shown that switching to green cleaning products can be cost-neutral. In some cases, when best practices are used, switching to green cleaning products has resulted in cost savings. In Illinois, which implemented a green cleaning for schools requirement last year, follow-ups with more than 25 school districts have yet to show any cost increases associated with the policy. As drafted, SB 668 does provide exemptions to schools that find the policy would present an economic burden. We believe that by switching to green cleaning products, Oregon schools can reduce costs, eliminate toxic hazards, and maximize student learning and health. And with my testimony, I attached some more information on the green cleaning, some examples of cost effectiveness, a message from Bruce Goldberg, director of DHS, who are switching to using green cleaning products at DHS facilities, a map showing schools in Oregon that are currently procuring green cleaning products in some capacity, and then a cost comparison chart with the current DAS contracting through one green cleaning provider that shows that green cleaning products don't have to cost more in all cases. I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I urge you to support both SB 637 and 668. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, committee? I appreciate your presentation and the map.
It's nicely colored.
It is very colorful. It will take us an hour or two to figure out what we're looking at here, but
thank you very
helpful.
Much.
Yes. Lisa Harkins.
We could use this as the ESD redesign map.
Too many.
Okay. That's funny. Actually, that looks like a current map.
Thank you, Chair Haas and members of the committee, for allowing me to speak to you today about Senate Bill 637. For the record, my name is Lisa Arkin, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Toxics Alliance. I served as a member of Senator Bonamici's work group on pesticides in and around schools, and I would like to start by acknowledging her leadership and her vision, working with the members, the very diverse members of the work group, for over 18 months to come up with Senate Bill 637. What you have in hand is a report prepared by the Oregon Toxics Alliance that exclusively uses data from our agencies here in Oregon. So this, Gail Shibley from DHS and Renee from OEC gave you some general information about what it means when a child is exposed to pesticides. This report will help you see the nature of the problem here in our own state. It specifically describes the problem of dozens of cases where children were exposed to pesticides in Oregon schools at all grade levels. And you will find that children were exposed in classrooms, in other parts of school buildings, on ball fields and playgrounds, also on their way to and from school. I'd like to share with you a couple of comments and research done by, again, members from Oregon agencies. First of all, starting with State Superintendent Susan Castillo, who gave me permission today to state that she fully supports Senate Bill 637 and IPM in schools. She stated, and I quote, "I believe very strongly that we need to look at ways to minimize the exposure of school children to pesticides and other harmful chemicals while at school." Also, you might want to know that Oregon Health Sciences University has been the site of some very important research done right here in the state that showed that when pesticides are detected in blood and urine samples, it correlates with reduced cognitive ability, impairments to memory and spatial orientation, and ability to draw pictures. So that kind of exciting research is going on right here in our state, with our own scientists and medical research professionals, and it helps inform the bill before you today. Advances in scientific awareness, medical research, and public health policy have forever changed the assumption that pesticides in any amount are safe around school children. And that's pretty much what the OHSU study found, that even very minute amounts of pesticides impact cognitive ability. At the heart of this transformation in scientific and public opinion about pesticides is the evidence that children face greater health risks from pesticide exposures and that the list of banned pesticides known to harm humans continues to grow. I'd like to urge you to read through this report, and in particular, you might want to turn to page 21, I believe it is, 22, excuse me. That gives you some examples of pesticide exposures at schools that cause sometimes an entire school to be evacuated, children to be rushed to emergency rooms or to seek other medical help, and sometimes resulted in the finding of a violation against a pesticide use law. I thank you again for your time. I thank Senator Bonamici for her hard work, and we hope that you will approve a bill that prioritizes children's health first, because that is our duty as adults, to give our children a healthy future. Thank you.
Well, we thank you for your presentation and your work on this. Questions, committee? Thank you. All right, I want to call up two people now, Catherine Friedman and Eric Geyer. Both come up. Start off with your name. And
thank you. I'm Catherine Friedman. I'm a citizen from Dallas. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the members for allowing me to speak today. I too, served on the committee to help write this bill. And I did take it to my attorney when I got an earlier copy. And so I just got the most recent copy of the bill yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to have an attorney look at it. But I'm very concerned that we haven't elevated children's health above building maintenance and other considerations related to integrated pest management. And I'm very concerned that the Oregon definition of integrated pest management does not put human health first as a top priority. So what I would like to say is it was my understanding from the focus of these meetings that we were to protect children's health while at school. During the course of the meetings, the focus shifted to the use of chemical applications for convenience of building maintenance and campus maintenance. This bill, I believe, reduces the standards currently observed by progressive Oregon school districts and limits liability in the event that death or serious injury results from the use of pesticides. I want the record to show that I in no way agree or support this bill. And it's my hope that in the near future we would have an opportunity to revisit this issue in the interest of children. Thank you.
Thank you. Your comments puzzle me a little bit. The standards that you refer to are where in the bill?
The very first page. We were told by legislative council that unless children's health appeared separately from the other items, if you look under at line 14, it says integrated pest management is a proactive strategy, and then it lists under that protection of health and safety. when all these are lumped together, legally it doesn't put children's health above any of the other items on the list, so it's no more important in from a legal standpoint than building maintenance, is my understanding. And I thought I kept harping on let's make health more important, but I'm just still not comfortable with it, and I think this will really, I think children are better off if this bill did not pass.
Well, it does say it focuses on the long-term prevention or suppression of pest management problems through economically sound measures that, under A, says protect the health and safety of students.
And economically sound measures, the most economically sound measure in many cases is the use of pesticides. It's not that pesticides are very effective, but they don't consider the health of children. And there's a lot of research to indicate that we shouldn't be exposing children to pesticides at school.
Okay.
So, thank you very much.
You're looking at me like expect that I want to respond. I would like to respond because that's certainly not the intent of the bill or the intent of the work group. We had a discussion about whether health and safety of students, staff, and faculty should be moved up on the list, and we did move it up on the list, and it's the intent of the bill to protect the health and safety of the students, staff, and faculty. And frankly, I'm kind of surprised that I'm just learning about this opposition today and would have preferred that it be expressed earlier.
I probably should have contacted you, but I knew that everybody was working on this, and I'm only a housewife, and we've got a lot of lawyers here that know more than I do, but this was the one thing that did stand out in my mind, is that unless we write some type of separate thing that puts the protection of children's health first, we have legally made it no more important than building maintenance. I would really urge that maybe the committee rewrite it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for your comments. Mr. Geyer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Eric Geyer. I'm a forester for Roseburg Forest Products. I want to thank you for the opportunity to comment on Senate Bill 637. In 2007, I testified before the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee on Senate Bill 20, which also dealt with pesticides in schools. And following that session, I was one of eight pesticide task force members appointed by then-Senator Avakian, which subsequently became the work group. I will summarize some of my comments. I think you have my written comments in front of you, and you're welcome to ask on anything. And I'll just skip through them. As a forester, I utilize IPM techniques as a course of business. The goal is to minimize the use of pesticides to reduce costs while maximizing the growth of the new forest. Additionally, as a parent of two girls, one who will be entering the public school system in 5 months, I'm certainly concerned about safe practices in schools. Based on that, I support the premise of this bill to improve child safety and the concept of IPM for schools. However, I cannot fully support the passage of Senate Bill 637 unless a few concerns are clearly addressed. And I'll just skip through those. Number one is applicators' requirement for licensing and training. And I believe this has been dealt with in the bill to some extent. I was looking for clarity on where the licensing would come from, and after a short discussion with Department of Agriculture, I think that may be in there, but I wanted to make sure that that process of licensing, as well as continuing education and training by IPM techniques, was included and clearly defined. Number two, pesticides should not be restricted to low impact only. The definition of low impact that's used in Senate Bill 637 is not designed for this type of use. It is really impossible to say that any pesticide has a low impact without understanding the objective. So to create a list, for instance, has to have that clear objective, and there is no such list for specifically for child safety in this case. So to delve into that a little deeper, the pesticides registered by the EPA have been extensively tested for acute and chronic exposures. In addition, a tenfold child safety factor is added on top of levels considered safe by the EPA. And in fact, the EPA puts out an annual report on children's environmental health, and they have since 1997 very specific information about children. Based on this extensive research, all registered pesticides are deemed safe if applied properly according to the instructions on the label in the proper environment at the proper time, in the proper way, and at the proper amount. Licensed applicators are trained to follow these guidelines for all pesticides. Number three, local districts should be given the flexibility to design their own approach. There are two components to this that concern me. Senate Bill 637 requires districts to notify all parents or guardians of pesticide applications at their school. Instead, a simple opt-in program would be more effective and could reduce costs. In this system, parents would have the option to receive notification of pesticide applications. Second component, this bill also requires an extremely prescriptive and detailed sign notification system for areas where pesticide applications will and have occurred. I thought I'd just read to you what the sign is required to say. It must bear the words, warning, pesticide treated area. Identify the name, trademark, or type of pesticide product. Identify the registration number assigned to each of the pesticide products. Give the expected date for the application, the reason for the application, and provide the name and telephone number of a contact person. Simply put, this could be reduced to a warning pesticide treated area and provide a contact name and number. You might wonder what the concern is, and there's a potential cost concern in terms of creating custom signs every time you have an application. But it also has a different component that I see on a daily basis in natural resources, and that's the likelihood or the possibility that these highly detailed signs really associate fear with pesticides for kids. And the bias that we deal with in natural resources is an ongoing problem, and it often begins in those early years. Number four, private schools and daycares should be removed from Senate Bill 637 requirements. Throughout this work group process, neither private schools nor daycares were represented. While public funds would be used to pay for the costs in public schools, private schools and daycares will be forced to pay for these requirements independently and without representation. I want to thank Senator Bonamici for her professional and organization throughout the process. Some participants in the work group clearly had some agendas that went beyond the safe use of pesticides in schools, but the senator held a steady course to meet those objectives that were stated from the beginning. I appreciate the work that the senator has done, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Questions?
No, I just wanted to point out with regard to Eric's comment about the flexibility and the notification that Section 7, it's on page 7 of the dashboards. In paragraphs 1 and 2, it does allow each district some flexibility in how they do the notification. We anticipated that could be by email if that's what the district so chooses to do.
Other questions?
Comment, Ms. Chair, if I could, on the posting of signs, because I've spent some time with pesticides myself, and you know, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, well, horseband ain't that bad, but anyway, you know, I've been dealing with pesticides since I was a little kid, but we do, when we apply pesticides, we post a sign on the field that says pesticides, and the beauty of that is it's a big sign, it tells you what's happening, and you don't have to read a whole lot of details. So I do think there's some merit in just having a sign saying this is what was done, and the beauty of that also is it becomes something recognizable and something that people can acknowledge. And Department of Ag, I mean, there are standard signs for that now, and I'm wondering if maybe moving to something recognizable, standard, and universal might be a better way to post the warnings.
I appreciate that, Senator, and I think that the concern was that if somebody does get exposed, they want the information that may be available on the sign to help them decide how to seek.
Well, you could still have a contact number. That's not a problem, but just a big sign that says, you know, that pesticides have been, warning, pesticides, you know, you need to keep the sign as simple as possible to make sure the message gets out. And it clearly is a warning, and when people come onto my farm, and we got a lot of U-pickers, a lot of everything there, and people see the signs and they stay out of there. You know, they're used to seeing that sort of thing, and so there, I think there's some merit to having something that's relatively common and becomes understandable and people get used to. So, just a thought.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
John Sundquist, Terry Witt, and Katie Fast. You think they'll all come up at the same time?
I think it's still achieved what you're after.
Huh?
I think it's just a new pesticide.
Senator Cruz, yeah. Did you use pesticides in that blueberry jam that you passed out?
Was that organic?
No. You're still here, aren't you?
Welcome.
Can you go first, John? Ready?
Yeah. All right. My name is John Sundquist. I live north of Coburg, and I want to thank Mr. Chair, committee members, and especially Senator Bonamici for taking charge and chairing the legislative work group that originated so much that it is worthwhile in Senate Bill 637. My point here is that I think this bill needs to be amended. I'm a Lane County farmer and timberland owner and have been working on toxics and pesticide reform for almost 40 years. I served on the work group that helped draft parts of 637, and I appreciate the good efforts and concept of a bill that would protect all school children from unnecessary pesticide poisons applied on school properties across the state. That protection should have come from an integrated pest management program that explicitly prioritized human and environmental health. The bill before you today lacks that explicit prioritization and must be amended to say that Section 2.3, I guess that's about line 13, integrated pest management plan means a proactive strategy that focuses on the long-term prevention of or suppression of pest problems through measures that protect the health and safety of students, staff, faculty, and users of school facilities. Children's health is paramount because the school is acting as the parent, in loco parentis. Health must be prioritized before other considerations, such as money savings and protecting the integrity of campus buildings and grounds. All decision-making must start with health prioritization, or this bill should not be enacted. The current bill has other problems, too, including implementation and enforcement is by the Oregon Department of Agriculture, an agency that encourages pesticide use rather than the Department of Human Services. Also, 637 is an unfunded mandate without inducements to encourage early attainment to economically disadvantaged school districts. And importantly, the concept of verifiable IPM is not here in the bill. The problems of the bill stem from a decision that the work group should derive from a consensus and that the work group should contain representatives of Oregon's pesticide lobby, Oregonians for Food and Shelter. OFS exists to promote unregulated and reliability-free poison pesticide use. Giving OFS work group veto power over children's health results and the core contradictions of the current version of the bill.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to sit here and quietly let him defame.
Senator Cruz, I'm going to address that.
Okay.
Thank you. I urge this committee to stand strong for children's health, to reject the amendments of the poison pesticide lobby, and to amend 637 to explicitly prioritize human and environmental health.
So, Mr. Chair, I would like to address that. And Senator Cruz, we've had some of these issues in the work group because we did have a wide range of views and opinions. And I tried to steer people away from personal attacks. And I want to assure not only Mr. Sundquist, but everybody on the committee and in the room that nobody had veto power over anything in this bill other than me, I guess, because I made the ultimate decision. But as you know, legislating is a process of negotiation and compromise, and that's why we ended up with the bill that we ended up with. But nobody had veto power on who was on the work group. I considered everybody's input and tried to get, even up to the last couple of days, input from people who shared their concerns. But I just want to correct that statement.
Senator Cruz?
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Senator. It's just that when somebody is portraying valuable, valid organizations in the state as trying to poison kids, I think it goes beyond the pale.
Okay. Anyone else? Thank you. Mr. Witt.
Chair Hass, members of the committee, my name is Terry Witt, and I am the Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. And I would like to start my testimony by taking exception to the comments that were just made. I would like the person that just basically denigrated Oregonians for Food and Shelter and its staff to give me an example of one instance. I've been with OFS for 22 years. Give me one instance where I have supported the unregulated, unregistered, or unlawful use of a pesticide. Give me one example, John, and I doubt that you can even come close. That said, Mr. Chair, I think we can leave that kind of talk out in the alley, because I think I could probably throw some barbs back, but I will refrain at this point in time.
Yeah, why don't we do this? Mr. Sundquist, you can be dismissed, and I'll let Mr. Witt complete his testimony on these two Senate bills.
Okay,
thank
so
you.
I'm standing down?
Please.
Okay.
First, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would really like to thank Senator Bonamici for doing a yeoman's job of wrestling with, as was noted, a very diverse group of folks, including some of the people that have testified previous. It was not an easy group. There are wide range of desired outcomes from one end of the continuum to the other. But I did not hear anyone in that group advocating for unregistered, unlawful use of pesticides or pesticides that would put in any way, shape, or form any person, child, or property in harm's way. That's the last thing that our organization would ever stand for, and in fact, that's one of the hallmarks of OFS, is to help ensure the responsible use of chemicals, not the irresponsible use. The bill before you today is, I think, a remarkable feat in terms of trying to find a middle ground that would work, that will get us a long way down the road towards an integrated pest management program that can work in schools. I would like to point out that integrated pest management is the key to integrated pest management is a proactive strategy. It is not a reactive strategy. It is not a strategy that says we wait for pests to come and then we go spray them. It is a proactive strategy that looks at prevention and suppression as being its first two elements to stop pests from happening initially. If you don't have a pest, doesn't make any difference how you're going to take care of it. If there are no pests to control, you don't have to worry about whether it's chemical, biological, mechanical, or manual. So I think with regard to concerns over IPM, the concept is very, very well understood, and that it is a prevention type of mechanism. And you establish, one of the other keys is that you then establish a monitoring and early detection system. Once you detect a pest, you establish what is known as a threshold. At what point do we need to do something about this pest? If you only have one carpenter ant running around your house, you don't need to treat. If you've got 1,000 carpenter ants running around your house, you better do something. So you establish a threshold. At what point does the pest, whether it's a weed or an insect or a rodent, become a problem that then requires action? At that point, then, you determine what is the best method to control that. Is it mechanical? Is it manual? Is it chemical? Is it biological? And you have to factor in all of the various elements, including the potential impact on non-target organisms. And with regard to that, I think you always hear that pesticides are toxins. They're very poisonous. They're poisons. Pesticides are not poisons. They are toxic. Everything in our environment is toxic at some level. These materials are designed to be toxic to a specific organism. And to say that a child has the same toxic reaction or toxic endpoint to an insecticide that an insect does, or the same reaction to a herbicide that a plant does, is a basic misunderstanding of how physiology works and how the various organisms work. Pesticides are keyed into the element that is different within that control organism so that it can be selectively controlled. That's why, for example, even in the herbicide field, you can selectively put a herbicide on your lawn. It doesn't kill everything. It just kills the dandelions. It can be that selective. And I find it irresponsible to say that a child is the same thing as an insect or as a weed. It is not. And risk is what we're trying to prevent. And that's a combination of both the toxicity of the material that it could be exposed to and the degree of exposure. And I think we all agree that minimizing exposure to toxic materials is a great thing to do. It's the right thing to do. And I don't think anyone would argue against that. But we need to keep in mind, first and foremost, that the pest is the problem, not the control mechanism. And so if we control the pest, we don't have to worry about the control mechanism. One or two other points that I would like to make. I too have a little bit concern over, should we be regulating private schools? I fully agree that if we have a public school that's funded by government dollars, that we have the authority and probably the right to go in and prescribe what they should or shouldn't be doing, provided we give them some funding to do that. With regard to private schools, I guess I fundamentally have some concern over putting an unfunded mandate on a private school and making it mandatory rather than voluntary. The only other thing that I'd like to close with is that we are highly concerned about the fiscal impact of this particular bill. Whether the program is housed and operated by the Department of Agriculture or any other agency in the state, there will be a fiscal cost associated with this. And I believe that the cost we're looking at is over $200,000 per biennium. In the Department of Agriculture, which is where the program is currently housed, we will be losing key basic programs, including many in the pesticide division, that we believe are absolutely essential to not only certifying applicators and making sure that they are properly trained, but also in terms of dealing with things like PARC, the Pesticide Analytical and Response Center, which, by the way, is on the chopping block when we get down to past the, I think it's the 20% cut range. PARC is also being used in this bill as a scientific advisory group. So we're almost in a, I don't know what you'd call it, kind of a daisy chain thing maybe. You know, we're spending money or requiring the department to spend money that they don't have, and at the same time we're cutting extremely important programs within the Department of Agriculture. So I would just urge that we look at, do we have a funding source for this program, and maybe are there ways that we could modify it a little bit so that the cost to the agency would not be as great. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Fast?
Thank you. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I also served on the Pesticide in Schools Work Group and would also like to commend Senator Bonamici for leading a group with diverse interests on a very emotional issue, and I thought she did so in a very professional and reasonable manner. In terms of the Dash 4 amendments, I think they are moving in the right direction, but from my perspective, I do have concerns with Section 9, which is the administrating
and enforcing of the rulemaking and implementation at Department of Agriculture. As Terry Witt just alluded to, as we're looking at the Department of Agriculture's budget this biennium, when they developed their 30% cut list, which is only recommendations to the Ways and Means Committee, three programs within the pesticide division are on that list, including the Pesticide Analytical Response Center, which is a consulting body within these rules. So for the Farm Bureau's perspective, these core functions that protect and administer pesticides for all users of the product are probably our number one priority. And then adding new programs to the Department of Agriculture and the Pesticide Division would be a number two priority for this session. And so I just want to make the committee aware of that, that there are challenges within the department's budget and it would impact our position on this legislation.
Questions for our panel?
Just Bruce? Just one. Terry, wasn't your organization one of the key players in the creation of the pesticide use reporting system?
Chair Hess, Senator Cruz, that's correct. We helped craft that law.
Okay. That's,
we also passed the law back in 1991, the state integrated pest management law.
Mr. Chair, I don't think that's unregulated use of pesticides.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Jim Tipp, Tricia Smith, Rob Wagner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I am representing Oregon School Employees Association and its 20,000 members working in K-12 schools. We participated along with other education stakeholders in the work groups that created both of these bills, and I'm pleased to be here to testify in support of them today. I first would like to say that some of you may know I'm not generally a work group fan, but the work groups that created these two bills, I can say, truly took into account the voices of everyone. They were very inclusive, and the products that you see are a result of consensus. Mr. Wagner and I are, and Mr. Lindsay will be representing the education contingent, but the rest of the education community also was in the room. And you won't see them opposing these bills, and they would be if there were a problem with them in terms of our budgets, because none of us would be spending money we don't have. We believe these bills will provide us with healthier schools, with better operating budgets, with money. They are common sense approaches to a new way of thinking about how we deal with pests. And I don't mean the kids. I mean the kinds with four legs and fly and those kinds of things. And also how we deal with keeping our schools as clean and sanitary as they must be in order to protect children. Because schools are different than any other kind of building, except perhaps your home, we hope, where children exist and everything goes in their mouth. So they have to be very clean, and they have to be cleaned with things that do not poison them, because they're going to put it in their mouth, whether it's the desk, the chair, the paper, their friend's ear. It doesn't matter. It's going in the mouth. And so it's very important for us to have the processes in place to protect them as much as we can. The larger school districts have already implemented both IPM and green cleaning processes in their districts because they have the resources and the expertise within those districts to understand that this is the best approach for them to take from a health standpoint and from a fiscal standpoint. The point of these bills is to provide that uniformity across the state and to provide the expertise to the smaller districts that don't have the resources to do it for themselves. That's what these bills do. It allows parents all over the state to have the same kinds of security and understanding whether or not their what the environment is like for their kids as the kids in Portland and Salem-Kaiser school districts have right now. It gives them the resources that they won't have without these bills. So I'll leave it with that and ask you to please support these passage of these bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Tipp, we have your written testimony here if you want to highlight.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Jim Tipp. I'm a 55-year resident of Columbia County. I'm now a field representative for Oregon School Employees Association. Prior to working for OSEA, I was a groundskeeper for the Rainier School District for 10 years. Rainier is located in Columbia County along the Columbia River. We have a large campus at Rainier, it's 215 acres, and we have one groundskeeper that takes care of all that area. A small part of the properties is wetlands, standing timbers, and with all school properties, you have sporting fields, lawns, and play areas. As you can imagine, we saw a variety of pests and also a variety of strategies how to control, some good, some not so good, to use to deal with them. Senate Bill 637 will improve ways school handle pest problems and will improve knowledge of training of staff and members and responsible for pest management. For example, requirements in school districts to adopt integrated pest management policy that identifies specific staff members' responsibilities to pest management will reduce instances of unauthorized staff or parents taking it upon themselves to deal with the problem. In my years of groundskeeping at Rainier, there were many times I found other people had brought products from home and applied it to my flower beds, our sporting fields and play areas without without notifying myself or administrators. This included applications of herbicides that ran the gamut from Weed and Feed to Casseron and who knows what else. One time we had a student go to the office with a rash from a pretty significant rash from rolling around in the lawns. The office staff contacted me to see what we'd put on the lawns. Went back and checked my records. We hadn't put anything on the lawns in over 6 months. But after going back and checking the lawns, there was something that had been applied to the lawns. Another instance was I worked a 6 to 2:30 shift. I came back to watch a ball game. I had a parent pouring bleach down a mole holes to get rid of the moles. These are real problems, and we had a good program at Rainier. I was a public applicator. I went and did my continuing education. Superintendent and board worked well with me. But parents still come and think they know more than the groundskeepers or the administration, so they're going to handle this. I feel that the Senate Bill 637 will help us control these type of problems. But along the same grounds, Columbia County, not all groundskeepers or maintenance workers for all the school districts have the public applicator's license or even have any training how to put out pesticides or definitely do not report. And I feel that if we get everybody in the education system on board with this, that our continuing education will be a lot better. Because my continuing education was mostly done with farmers and greenhouse growers because very few schools in my area had people going to public applicator education classes. So with that, we'll have a larger pool of applicants and we'll have better training. In closing, I'd like to say that providing uniformly training and policy guidance in a way schools handles dangerous chemical is in the best interest of our students across the state and the thousands of people that work with them every day. I encourage you to pass Senate Bill 637 and 668. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Rob Wagner representing the American Federation of Teachers. Our members include folks from pre-K through post-secondary, and along with our partners with the Oregon School Employees Association, we're now the largest affiliate of the Oregon AFL-CIO. We strongly support Senate Bill 668 and 637, and as a caveat, I'm not a technical expert when it comes to these issues. Nematodes, endocrine disruption, mutagens aren't in the lexicon of my everyday work here in the building. So for technical questions, I'm sure there are folks that are a little bit more knowledgeable in handling some of those questions. But we are a proud partner in a comprehensive effort to promote green schools, and I did want to talk just very, very briefly about the campaign we have launched here in Oregon and also nationally to address healthy schools and the relationship to student performance, both which extend to the bills that you have before you today. I'm just distributing the latest document from AFT's Building Minds, Minding Buildings campaign, where our 1.4 million members across the country are advocating for a comprehensive strategy to promote environmentally sound and healthy schools and creating learning environments where students and staff really do have the opportunity to maximize student learning. This guide provides several national case studies where union members have been involved in establishing best practices on this issue in other states. And it's interesting that here in Oregon, where we do often credit ourselves for our spirit of policy innovation, at a statewide level, as this document shows, we're a little behind the times when it comes to implementing green schools policies. And passages of these two bills would be a good first step in progressing on this issue. Now, although our advocacy on this issue does extend to high environmental standards for design, construction, and renovation of school buildings, and there is a House Bill 3357, which addresses this issue, the policies promoted in 668, Senate Bill 668 and 637 are consistent with the key findings, and the data is clear that there is a direct correlation between student learning, productivity, and educational attainment with healthy and sound learning environments. If you turn your attention to just one brief case study in the Building Minds report in the Lockport Township in Illinois, where they mandated the use of green cleaning products by state law as of May 2008, there was less reaction to the skin of custodians who were experiencing rashes before from using harsher cleaning products. And just in terms of our membership and the health of our members here in Oregon, custodians from K-12 schools through community colleges to our faculty and staff, where many schools and colleges have already taken steps outlined in Senate Bill 637, they've noticed very positive results. In closing, as I mentioned, these bills are a solid first step in a broader discussion about indoor air quality, where there is a documented relationship between colds and flu and child asthma, which is also the number one cause of student absenteeism. We will be encouraging the legislature to consider other measures critical to our staff and also the student health and performance around natural lighting, better acoustics, and other elements of the environmental standards for green and healthy schools. But today we encourage your passage of Senate Bill 637 and 668. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you all. Any questions?
I do have one.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be for Tricia Brabant. On these, we'll start with these two measures that we're talking about today, and I just want to talk about the fiscal part of it, you know, where you may have a $200,000 fiscal here and here, and we've had other bills, and we'll have more, as you just mentioned, wanting to do that. And as you know, we're all in a very restrained environment, and in all likelihood, the school fund is going to be significantly less that will be passed by the time at least June 30 comes around. So as we look at other ideas, and we say these are real good ideas, and they all kind of add up, and where's that coming from, while we're also struggling with, you know, I need every dollar I can for these other programs. Would your organizations be supportive of say, like these two pieces of legislation and other things we might consider that we hear support from, that that they be paid for, that when whatever the school number comes up with, that these are paid for off the top of the allotment to K-12 schools, and then the formula takes place, because we're going to have to find money for this somehow. So if we're supportive of this, would we pay for these types of programs, you know, allocate the 200 here, 100, and then the rest of it goes through the formula so that you can actually do that? Because I'm trying to figure out how we're going to pay for these things as we have all this stuff, and they may be good, but that, you know, it's K-12 enhancement should come from K-12, and somewhere I think we need to peel those dollars off before we get into the rest of it, and I just want to see where your position might be.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, thank you for the question. I assume you mean in this time of financial crisis, K-12 improvement should come from K-12, because you know we have a long way to build a quality education program, even according to the legislative standards that exist in the law right now. As to the specifics of your question, when I first entered into the discussions about these bills, one of the things that was very, very important to me personally, representing the membership that I do, was the fiscal reality of what would it cost districts if these bills passed, if we got our wish, what would happen? Because, as you know, we have never been rolling in dough in K-12. We have never had enough money, as I just said, to do what we are already required to do. So that's even absent today's fiscal crisis. Bills that cost additional money without additional funding are bills that I view with great caution, always. And you will see me doing that in this building. Through the process of this work group, I became convinced by the experts, both at the university, at Oregon State University, and the experts in school districts who sat with us in this work group who have already implemented these programs, those at Portland Public and at Salem Kaiser. They've done this already. And they told us that this is a better process. It is a cheaper process. It's not going to cost money, Senator. I believe it will save money. And additionally, I will tell you that schools currently have a budget for pests, a budget for cleaning. And what this does is it redirects how they spend those dollars. And we believe saves some of those dollars that can then be used either for, I would advocate for another custodian since there aren't enough of them anymore, or some other educational deficiency that the district sees that money should be spent for. So I don't believe this will cost more, Senator. I believe it will save money. And I think that if there is upfront cost to districts, they have budgets already for these programs that should be sufficient to manage them.
And just briefly, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, I think it's a very fair question. And we would certainly be open to having additional conversations about how we fund these programs. I will say, in my preliminary research on this, and if you look at the study, there are states like Ohio that implemented environmentally sound building retrofit and new construction, they're actually demonstrating that they're saving millions of dollars. So through decreased use of energy that it takes to actually operate a building and other means. In terms of the specific bills before this committee today, the testimony that I've heard leads me to believe that, I'm interested to see what the fiscal is going to be. But when you look globally at student outcomes and absenteeism, student performance, I think it's an important rubric to have that conversation about what is the measure and what's the cost of keeping kids healthy in school and being able to focus and being able to get the sort of outcomes that you're ultimately responsible for. So,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think we kind of got to the point on we don't have fiscal statements yet, and when we do, we have to account for that going forward. It may save money 6 months from now, a year from now, but we still up front have to decide how do we do that, and I was just looking for a little guidance of what you thought we might do to make that happen. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you again.
Thank you. Okay, we have, finally, Karen Elliott, Oregon Nurses Association. You're still here. Thank you for hanging with us.
Chair, Senator Haas, committee members, my name is Karen Elliott. I'm a member of the Oregon Nurses Association and currently a co-chair of our Cabinet on Health Policy for ONA. As a nurse leader and a parent and a grandparent, I'm here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 637. I worked as a public health nurse in the field of maternal child health for over 30 years. As a nurse and in my own experience, I know household and garden pesticide exposures to humans, especially to children, can be very hazardous. And I'd like to quote from the letter I've given you. Mae Thompson is my fellow co-chair of our cabinet in ONA, and she's written the letter you have. Pesticide exposures can be linked to childhood non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and the increased incidence of leukemia in children. Other diseases associated with exposures to pesticide include fertility problems, premature birth, and low birth weight, birth anomalies, learning disabilities, autism, and increased incidence and severity of asthma. This bill describes how pesticides can be eliminated or limited in school on school property. It offers a proactive approach for the health and safety of students, staff, faculty, and volunteers, as well as protecting adjacent ecosystems. I have an interest in the safety for all children, and in addition to that, I have grandchildren now on those school grounds. A granddaughter I take Monday nights to her softball practice and see her rolling in the grass. And so when I think in a very personal way about this, in addition to my professional knowledge, the answer is clear. We need to support safer pest management. So I urge you to support this bill.
Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have two names left on my list here. James Sundell. Are you here? You don't look like James.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lindsay Capps with the Oregon Education Association. James Sundell, who is a OEA UNISERV consultant from Albany, was going to be here today. Actually was here, had to leave because of other business. But James works very closely with a coalition of our members who care very deeply about indoor air quality in their classroom. As you know, OEA represents about 47,000 educators and education support professionals across the state, both in K-12 and community colleges. But I think the bigger issue here are the 538,000 students that go through our public schools every day. I think a lot has already been said by the panelists we've had already about the great benefits that can come from putting these types of programs into our school, whether it be procurement of green cleaning products or an integrated pest management system. I think there's cost savings involved that can help districts in tough fiscal straits, and there are certainly health benefits and student achievement benefits that come from that. And so I would just end by saying, commending the work of Senator Bonamici. I think all of the members of the work group who I think came into this process with the best intentions in terms of coming out with a product that was workable, that ultimately would protect Oregon kids, and we urge your passage of these bills. These are good things that we ought to get done for our kids.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a comment that Lindsay actually wore two hats because he started out on the work group with the OEC and then ended up with the
true.
OEA. So
that's true.
The work group was in existence through two of Lindsay's jobs.
Next time you might be on the OBA or the
OBA. Work my way through the alphabet, Senator. Thank you.
Andy Harris.
Chairman Haas and Senators, thank you. My name is Andy Harris. I'm a Salem physician. I'm a faculty member at OHSU. I'm speaking today in support of SB 637 on behalf of the Oregon Center for Christian Values. Exposing our children to the spraying of pesticides is both a medical and a moral issue. Pesticides are toxic chemicals precisely because they are designed to kill living things. Many are toxic to the human endocrine, immune, and nervous systems. Learning disorders, childhood cancer, asthma, sterility, and Parkinson's disease are among the conditions which have been linked to pesticide exposure in humans. Naturally, our concern is for school-age children, but there are many adults in our schools as well, some of whom have chemical sensitivities and some of whom are pregnant teachers. Even small single doses of organophosphate, such as Durospan and diazinon, on a critical day of fetal development, can decrease DNA synthesis in the developing brain. resulting in deficits in cell numbers and function. This can lead to hyperactivity, developmental delays, behavioral disorders, and decreased coordination. Reducing pesticide use makes good medical sense, cuts costs to school districts, and promotes health. Many Oregon cities, including Salem, instituted integrated pest management policies years ago because of the health risk to children in city buildings and parks. We should do no less in our schools and playgrounds. Children are among the most vulnerable members of our community. They trust us to provide a quality education in a safe and non-threatening environment. Why would we needlessly expose them to toxic chemicals when other non-toxic alternatives exist? Oregon Center for Christian Values believes we have a particular responsibility to look after the weakest and most vulnerable members of our society. We feel called to be stewards of a clean and healthy environment for our children. Care for the lives and health of our neighbors and their children is an extension and an expression of God's love for us. We ask you to support SB 637 and to add the phrase, or suspected to be, after known to be, to the definition of unsuitable pesticide products in Section 9.3. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. I don't want to hit you with a question out of left field, but I'm going to do it anyway. Private schools are Christian-based, I know, and we had some testimony today that, well, this might make sense for public schools, but don't put this onto a private school. So your thoughts?
Well, I think it's an issue about kids and health. So as a physician, I would think that this ought to be universal to protect our kids. It also, as I say, is protecting the faculty and the teachers. I don't think it's as costly as people think. I think that's their first reaction is government interference and what's this going to cost us. And I think the committee did an excellent job of hashing out a lot of those details. And I would agree that those educators that were speaking earlier talked about cost savings.
Thank you. Senator Bonamici.
No, I just have a comment, Mr. Chair. We did discuss that private school issue in the work group several times. And I contacted somebody I know who works for Knowledge Learning Center, which is the largest private provider of daycare in the state. They already use integrated pest management, and they're very supportive of the concept. And they were going to try to get somebody to come and just didn't get here today, but they're already using integrated pest management. And they said it is actually a cost savings for them. I believe that they contract with a company who follows integrated pest management, but they're already using integrated pest management. And as I said, very supportive.
As far as daycare centers go, the younger the child, the more vulnerable they are to the toxic effect of pesticides.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's everyone who signed up. Very quickly, we would like, if they're willing, to call up the OSU guys to ask them about health and grant money. If you three wouldn't mind coming up from the Pest Management Center. Senator Bonamici, you had some questions that you, I think, wanted to get on the...
Thank you, and I do. And I wanted them to get up here also so I could formally thank them without them sort of being in the corner, thank them for all their expertise. I wondered, after you introduce yourselves, if you could address the concern that was raised about whether this bill may not prioritize children's health. And then also I'd like you to discuss the grant money that you apparently are going to receive to assist with integrated pest management in schools. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your kind words. I'm Paul Jepson. I direct the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University. I'm designated by the USDA and Oregon State University as the state's IPM coordinator.
And I'm Jeff Jenkins. I'm a professor in the Department of Environmental and Molecular Toxicology at OSU and also an extension specialist.
And I'm Tim Stock. I'm the state Pesticide Safety Education Program Coordinator. I work at the Integrated Plant Protection Center at Oregon State University. And I'm also the school IPM coordinator at OSU.
And what were your questions?
I wonder if you could address the how Senate Bill 637 will protect children's health and the health of people who are in schools.
Well, very briefly, in more than 50 published surveys since 1994 in schools in the United States, deficiencies have been found throughout this country in terms of unmanaged infestation and unsafe and illegal pesticides use. Our greatest concern is associated with the knowledge that pests have an extraordinary ability to locate the food and resources that schools provide. And so the world we're going to enter will be one where staff in the school realize that a tuna sandwich that's been left on a counter for a day actually can feed 10,000 cockroaches or 50 mice and shouldn't just be seen as an item of trash. So our greatest concern is in terms of the reduction of pest infestations, from which the greatest health benefits will accrue. And certainly in our state, there are some serious issues to do with asthma, allergens, and exposure to pests that are the prime concern. And then secondarily, of course, pest management programs involve the very responsible use of pesticides, and in encouraging an awareness of responsible use patterns in school and avoidance of hazardous use practices, they almost inevitably have health benefits in terms of reducing the potential for harm. So first and foremost, our perception is that this is a child health issue. But primarily it's associated with reducing the infestations of pest pressures in schools that thereby lead to a reduction in exposure to pesticides. And I don't know whether my colleagues have any further comments.
Well, with regard to the comment of not adequately, the bill not being adequately focused on kids' health, all of the criteria in the bill for selecting pesticides are health-based. It's not efficacy-based, but health-based. And the nuance of where the emphasis on health comes in the bill, I can't comment on. But I do believe the language that is in there is very much focused on the protection of kids' health.
Okay. And then I had a question about the grant funding.
Timothy Stock here is the school IPM coordinator. He works in the Integrated Plant Protection Center. He's funded from federal sources and from state sources and already has within his position a proportion of his FTE that's to develop and deliver a school IPM program in the state. We apply for grants to support our activities in the Integrated Plant Protection Center. I'm the only OSU tenured employee. The other 13 people in the center are funded by grants. We applied this year for grants to the Extension IPM program in the USDA, and Tim applied for funds also with colleagues nationally for EPA support. We've obtained nearly $80,000 for expenditure this year on employment of a research assistant who will help develop the first IPM coalition with a group of schools, conduct trainings, and start delivering IPM in schools within selected school districts. So, and that's something we intend to continue, whatever the outcome. And but we've been successful, and we hope to continue to be successful in the future. Our goal is to be a channel for resources, our mandate, our responsibility, and that's one of the ways in which we can help support programs such as this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I join Senator Bonamici in thanking you for your assistance and professionalism and help in putting this together.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
And can I just make one more comment before you close? I also wanted to acknowledge the ongoing assistance and input on the work group from the Department of Agriculture. And I know Lisa Hansen and Chris Kirby are in the room, sitting there quietly. But before we close, I just wanted to acknowledge their participation has been very valuable to the process.
Thank you all. All right, I want to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 637 and 668. And, colleagues, you know, I always try to get you out by 5 o'clock, and today we were able to get out by 4 o'clock.
So you started at 1.
There's a caveat. Good management is what it is. We are adjourned.
Oh, that's something.
Clever.